Log Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I am your host, Lisa Stone, and I am coming at you live from Marietta, Georgia, which is a suburb of Atlanta, the home of Alta Tennis and the biggest league tennis community in the country. It's crazy here. We're in the throes of Alta season here in Atlanta, and spring Alta season is my favorite because the weather is usually pretty nice, and I am pleased to say that my team is in the running to go to the playoffs, so wish us luck this week. It is our last match before playoffs, and if we can win two lines, well, then we're going to get to go, and I'm really excited. We have a great show for you today. I've got Tom Alsop with me. Tom is a tennis coach. He has a website called tpatennis.com, wherein he offers online coaching advice to players, to parents who want to be able to coach their children, and also to other coaches. And I've just been digging around on his site today a little deeper, trying to learn a little bit more about what it is that Tom offers. I know you guys are going to be thrilled to hear this information that he's got to share with us today. And before I bring Tom on, though, I want to just give out our call-in number. It is, as always, 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. We're going to go to a quick commercial break so we can pay for today's show. And when we come back, you will have me with our guest today, Tom Alsop.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Hello again, it's Lisa Stone, your host today on the Parenting Aces radio show, and I am so thrilled to have with us today Tom Alsop. Tom, are you there?
I am. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. It's a gorgeous day here in Atlanta. A little bit of pollen, but other than that, I can't complain.
Sounds good.
So, thank you so much for coming on the show today, and as I mentioned in the introduction, I've been poking around your website some and am just really kind of intrigued by this whole notion of online coaching and what you have to offer to players, to their parents, and to other coaches as well. So I think the best thing for me is to let you give a little introduction into TPA Tennis and how you came up with the idea, why you felt there was a need for something like this, and, you know, what you have to offer.
Well, I designed it to help parents to effectively coach their own children. I understand that parents are really involved in their child's tennis. You know, pretty much every parent I meet is coaching in some degree. you know, whether it's just feeding balls or analyzing matches. You know, coaches can't always watch the kids play every match, and the parents are the ones that are watching, they're analyzing, they're talking to the kids after the matches, or the, as I say, the feeding balls. And I just wanted to find a way to kind of work with them rather than seeing them as an enemy. I'm not saying every coach, you know, sees them as an enemy, but I know that I read something about parents being banned from academies. Is that something you've heard about, Lisa?
Yes, actually. Yes. Well, I think there have been instances where parents have gotten overly involved and haven't allowed the coaches to do their job. And so I think there are some academies who have just found it easier to say, you know, drop your kid off, pick your kid up, and, you know, we'll do evaluations on a regular basis. But other than that, we really don't want to see you every day.
Yeah, I was in Colorado at a tennis facility, and even with the private lessons, they didn't allow anyone on the court. So that's not an ideal situation, really. I understand why they don't really want the parents to get too involved. I mean, one of the reasons is that I feel like it's tough for parents to watch a coach. Like, for myself, I'm trying to work on the edge of success and failure. Like, that's where I'm always at. And I think that it's tough for the parents to watch their kids failing, where they want them to always succeed, and when they miss a shot or do something, they feel like they have to say something. And even when they're saying something and it might be right, if I'm working on something else, it can be, you know, it doesn't really work out right. If I give the kid two things to work on and then the parent says, hey, bend your legs, they might be right, but it's just kind of getting in the way of my coaching, and I think that's the problem that coaches have. So when I'm coaching, I don't really want the parents to be involved that much, but I do try to involve them in, you know, what we're working on, where we're going, what we're trying to do, and also give them methods to help them. You know, if they're hitting with the kids throughout the week, you know, often parents are hitting with the kid more than the coach. Now, I might give someone an hour's lesson, but the parent might hit with them, you know, 4 or 5 hours during the week. So I feel like it's in the player's best interest if I show the parent how to coach them, you know, give
sure.
them some advice, give them some tips.
Well, it's interesting that you bring this up, because your point is really one of the reasons that I started Parenting Aces to begin with. And it's that whole point of, you know, coaches feel one way about things, parents feel another way about things, the players are kind of stuck in the middle. And in my mind, as a parent, it comes down to good communication between the coach and the parent. So if a coach can say to a parent, here's what I need you to do when you're sitting there, and here's what I need you to do when you're on the court with the kid at home, and here's what I need you to do during match play, you know, when you're observing. I mean, all of those things are so helpful to us as parents, and so many tennis parents, you know, I mean, we all have our kids' best interests at the forefront, but we don't all understand exactly what our role is supposed to be, especially when it comes to our relationship with the coach. And so I'm really glad you brought all of that up, because it's an issue that's very difficult to navigate.
I think it's also an issue between the parent and the player. Because as you said before we got on the air, you know, when you say you're some 16 now, so it's getting up there to where he kind of knows a lot about the game, but when you say something to him, he generally doesn't listen to you. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't really know that much in his mind. Yeah, I mean, he knows I know a lot, but, you know, I think he hears things differently when they come from me versus when they come from someone else.
Yeah, and I think what I see is the sort of parent and player relationship becomes sort of the person who knows versus the person who doesn't. And And maybe I'm not a parent, so maybe that's how you effectively parent your kids. To just basically say, go tidy your room. If you don't do it, there's consequences. You know, I know that's how people would parent, but I think as a tennis coach, you can't just say, do this or else. And I know that some parents do that. You know, some parents might not be quite so blunt as to just say that. But it pretty much is a command style that parents use of saying, I know what you need to do, and just basically do it because I know I'm the parent. And I think that it's really important to give the player reasons for doing what you ask them to do. I think that's what it all boils down to.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, I mean, I would call myself a contextual coach. Everything I say would be, if you want to do this, this will help you to do that. If you want to take the ball down the line, see if you can do this. So the player has a goal, and you're giving them something to help them achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to do this, this will help you to achieve what you want to do. You understand? Rather than saying, turn your shoulders. You can say, hey, if you turn your shoulders a little bit more, that will help you to get a little bit more power on that shot. So you're not just telling them what to do. You're giving them a solution to the problem. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And it's, again, relating this back to my personal experience, I'm dealing with this very moment. My son has a really nasty blister on his palm, on his tennis playing hand, and it's open and it's causing him a lot of discomfort and pain, and he's got a big tournament coming up this weekend. And we just had this conversation yesterday. I said, how committed are you to playing this tournament this weekend? And he said, very committed. And I said, okay, then there's some specific things you're going to need to do to get your hand healed in time to play. Are you willing to do
that? That sounds great. I don't want to cut you off. That, no, that's a great way to word it, to say, what do you want to do? Do you want to play or don't you want to play? Like, you're putting it in his hands, which is fantastic. And then he has a decision to make whether, and you can also, you could give him a solution to his problem, and then he can decide whether he wants to do it or not.
Exactly. And it's kind of the first time I've used that approach with him, and it's just Monday, so I'm not really in a position to judge its effectiveness yet, but it will be interesting to kind of track his progress this week and see.
Yeah, you're really trying to sell it. My friend hates me to use the word sell, but he used to sell mortgages, so when I use the word sell, he frowns upon that. But you really have to sell things to the player in a way that they want to do it for themselves. I can give you an example of, I was working with a coach the other day through my website, ppatennis.com, and when I got on the phone with him and I was asking him, he wanted to know how to help these kids to basically play better tennis. So I asked him, what are they trying to achieve? So he said, to do a good swing over their shoulders. So that was like number one primary thing, is to do a good swing over the shoulder, which is, for me, that's not the goal. So basically I asked, for what? And he said, so that they can be consistent. And I said, so wouldn't their goal be to be consistent? And he said, yes, by doing a good swing. But I said, what's a good swing? And he said, for them to swing over the shoulder. And I said, well, what if they're jammed? What if the ball's behind them or they're stretched? If they swing over the shoulder on that shot, they're just going to mess it up. They'll miss the ball. And he said, not on that ball, on normal balls. And I said, well, what's a normal ball? You know, we're playing tennis out here. Like, what is a normal ball? So, I mean, I can see how that could be kind of annoying to him. But for me, the way to phrase it would be to say, you know, what are you trying to achieve? You know, maybe the goal is to be consistent. So I can say, if you can strike the ball in front of you and follow through over your shoulder, you know, that would help you to be more consistent by swinging toward your target. So see if you can put yourself in a position where you're able to do this. And that gives them a little bit of flex, you know, they can be flexible with it. They can say, for a start, they're trying to get in the right place so they can do it, but they're also, they have a decision to make. If they're in the right place, they can do it, but they can also adjust and make adjustments, hustle, get the ball back in play, which is equally as important. I guess the other thing would be, you know, with children, you get faster results because you've given them a reason to do the swing. This swing will help you to be more consistent if you can get yourself in a position that allows you to do it. So it's a whole different way of looking at it, but it puts everything into context.
Well, I have to say that one of the biggest frustrations as the parent who's not a coach, and I am so not a coach, is not every coach communicates as clearly as you're communicating right now. And it's like you're talking about this coach that said he, you know, he wants him to finish over the shoulder. But so that coach, until you asked him, you know, what are you trying to have them achieve with that, it took several layers of questions before he was able to verbalize really the goal, right?
And they don't really know why they're doing things.
Right.
You know, they're just doing it because they think that's the right thing to do, so.
But I
while I have this on my mind, I think for the number one thing for parents when I'm coaching them is to say, don't say anything without explaining why you want it done. And that's not just for parents, I mean, it's for coaches too, but at the most, the people I work with most are parents who are coaching their own kids, so. That's the one thing I say. Don't say anything unless you have a reason for saying it, because the kid won't listen, and it's not easy to make changes. You really have to sell it to them.
Right. I will suggest to my listeners, if you go to tpatennis.com, there's a video on the front page of the site, and it's a sample of the work that Tom does. And in that video clip, you had gotten, I guess, some video footage of a little boy from the parents, and you, in this video clip, you're analyzing that footage and giving specific suggestions for improvements for this child. And it was a pretty young child. I mean, that kid looked like he was about 7, yes?
Six or seven. Pretty amazing. He's really amazing.
He was an amazing and very athletic. But what I loved in your pieces of it were the fact that for every bit of advice that you had, for every bit of coaching that you had, you gave the parents a way to sell it back to the child. So you would say, okay, you know, I would suggest he, you know, use this footwork pattern. And the way you're going to get him to use this footwork pattern is you're going to tell him it's going to help you generate more power on that particular shot, or, you know, whatever the specific was. But that was one that jumped out at me. And I loved that. I loved the fact that you gave the parent, or even if it were a coach watching this, you know, the way to get the kid to do it, the selling point. And I know you said your friend doesn't like you to use that word sell, but my goodness, I mean, especially when you're dealing with teens or older kids, it is a sales pitch. I mean, it's constantly a sales pitch. And it's important that we as parents and parent coaches especially, I would guess, learn how to phrase it that way.
Yeah, I think the other thing is the decision-making. You know, as coaches, we often just tell the kids what to do, and we say, you know, we want 10 balls into this corner, I want you to do this swing and, you know, this footwork pattern, whatever it is. And I said this in the video, but as a player, everything I do, I mean, as a person, as a human being, I have a decision on everything I do is I have to make a decision. But as a tennis player, do I want to hit it down the line, cross court, be aggressive, defensive? Do I want to add more spin? You know, what foot do I want to play off? And if we don't, you know, I kind of, I don't want to talk bad about other coaches, but I do feel like there's something in this community where it's just kind of command style, and it's just, you know, do this, I want this, I want 20 shots like this. And there's no real, you know, you're not, the player's not making the decisions. And that's what tennis is all about. It's all about decision making. And that's what I did in that video, is to say, if you want to recover a little bit faster, this is the footwork pattern to use. If you want to be a little bit more aggressive, you know, you can use this footwork pattern. So then the player has a decision to make. Now, the problem with that is that the kid's going to fail quite a lot, because not only are you asking them to do something new, they now have a decision to make about which footwork pattern. I think in that video I gave him 4 different footwork patterns. So now they have to, and he probably has a few that he already does. So now you have to choose what footwork pattern that you would like to use. And, you know, he's going to mess it up sometimes. And parents, as I said in the beginning of this show, that I think that's kind of difficult for parents to see the kid messing up. But as long as he learns from every attempt, I think it's very productive, because he's engaged in his own learning. He's figuring out things. He's involved in his own learning, his own decision making. How do you feel about that? Did I lose you? I've been told that I've got to keep talking if Lisa goes away. But there are some other decision making things when I'm coaching people where I can set up games where I can. Are you there, Lisa?
I'm here. I'm sorry, I did get disconnected for a sec, but I'm back.
So I was just saying that there are some things that you can do as coaches to work on the decision making of the pupil. But I think it's a huge problem that people don't really make that many decisions. You know, they're not encouraged to make decisions. So then when they're playing, it's a huge part of the game. And if you're just being told what to do, you're not working on that side of it, and you're just not going to be a good tennis player.
Well,
does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense, and it provides a great segue, actually, into my next question. And it's a point that you made to me prior to going on the air, which is that transition between how they practice on a day-to-day basis and how they play in a match situation or a competitive situation, and learning how to make that transition properly. And, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on how we as parents and parent coaches can help our children transition better from the practice court to the competition court.
Yeah, well, I think decision-making is a huge part of that. I know that quite often, like, kids might play... I like playing baseline games because it's a lot quicker. You know, when obviously serving and return is a huge part of the game, but it takes a lot of time. So, you know, do a lot of baseline games, and I know that you'll feed the ball in up the middle, the other person will hit it up the middle, and it's not that realistic. So I like to have a variety of different feeds to start the point. That's something that everyone can easily do. The game that I like to play, I call it filthy feeds, the English word, filthy. Well, it's not an English word, but it's what we always use. We use it quite frequently. And what happens is a person stands at the sideline, drops the ball on the single sideline, and feeds the ball in wherever they want on the court. So you have a decision. Do you want to stand at the right sideline, or do you want to stand at the left sideline and start off the point? do you want to stand at the left sideline? You want to go cross court to their backhand? You know, assuming everyone's right-handed, you want to go cross court to their backhand to start out the point? You want to go to the right-hand side and go cross court to their forehand, or you want to take it up the line? Before you feed, you basically have a decision to make. And quite often when I get kids for the first time, they don't really know what to do in that situation. The decision making is kind of core. And for me, it's decision making versus execution. So you can have a good decision, but you might not execute it, and then you lose the feeling. But the two, you have to work on the two. You have to say, you know, what was your decision on that shot? And, you know, would you do that again? Is there anything that you would like to change on that shot? I mean, you can even do that without the ball. You could say, all right, you're in this situation. What are your options? What would you do if I put you in this corner and you had a backhand out wide and you were a little bit stretched? What would you try and do with it? And you just ask the person what they would want to do. If they say, you know, I want to hit a drop shot, then I'm going to ask them why they think that's a good idea. I mean, that might be an extreme example, but I think there are games that can kind of focus on the decision-making, which helps players to, you know, to perform under pressure and play matches a bit more realistic. It creates an overlap between practice and competition.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
Could
you visualize the game that I just said?
Absolutely. I think it's fantastic, and I think, especially with a player who's got the fundamentals of their strokes down, and now it's time to, you know, start talking strategy a little more. You know, it's even a game that you could play driving to a tournament, let's say, if you had a long car ride and you're looking for something to entertain yourself along the way.
That's very true. Let's talk about the fundamentals, though, because I think it's a huge problem that the swing is, you know, the technique, the swing is often looked at as the goal. And the goal is not the swing. The swing helps you to achieve the goal. And I think that with all these websites, with the, you know, you can slow everything down, you can watch Roger Federer's technique, you can analyze all the professionals in super slow motion, that the swing becomes everything. You're trying to work on the swing. But for me, the swing is not the goal. I coach the swing to help you to achieve whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. So if you're trying to achieve a bit more power, some more control, I can teach you, I can show you the swings, I can make adjustments to your swing to help you to achieve certain things. I think people, especially with beginners, they get caught up in the swing. For example, I coached a six-year-old, and I had a coach ask me why I wasn't coaching them the big C, the C take-back on the loop. Mm-hmm. People might call it the power loop, but the loop take-back. And my question was, you know, for what? What's the point in doing that? And when I looked at, I was watching YouTube videos last night, and they had someone, I guess maybe a six-year-old, at the baseline, the coach, or maybe it was a parent, was throwing the balls to them, and they were doing a big loop and just basically smacking the ball all over the place, and they think that they're trying to coach good technique. But that's not the point. The point is for someone to be able to go out there, be able to move the feet, find the ball, hit the strings, control it. Can you move it right? Can you hit it left? Can you hit it deep? Can you hit it short? It's like this, Lisa. I'll give you an analogy. It's like,
okay,
you remember when you were teaching your kids how to use a knife and fork?
Yeah.
So, what was the goal?
To get the food into their mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Without getting it all over the head or stabbing themselves in the eye or something like that. That's right. The goal. So, but why didn't you teach them, you know, perfect technique? You know, you could have practiced them holding the knife and fork like the Queen Mother. You understand?
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, this is what people out there are doing. They're trying to get the technique down, but you're trying to just achieve something. You're trying to get the food from the plate into the mouth without anything wrong happening. And then you can refine their skills. Over time, you can refine the skills. You can give them advice for how to, you know, maybe do it a little bit better, more efficiently, whatever it might be. But just to kind of just go right to the technique, it doesn't make sense.
Well, now there's a lot of debate about that, though, right? I mean, I'm sure when you're talking with your coaching peers, you know, there's some coaches who feel very strongly that you can't teach the game of tennis until the player has good technique. And then others have more of your philosophy, which is the technique is simply a means to an end. And, you know, you work on both simultaneously to achieve the desired result.
Right, and I've coached really good technique. As in, you know, you can watch some of the pupils I coach and be like, wow, great technique. But it's still, you're still coaching it to achieve something else. The reason that I had them use the wrist a little bit more was to achieve power. It wasn't just because it's just trying to copy Roger Federer.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? It was real purpose to them developing a swing. And you can't just stand someone in a corner and have them doing a beautiful swing because I'm sorry, my phone just started bleeding in my ear. You can't just have someone doing a perfect swing because, yeah, you might have someone stood there and doing a great technique, but what does that mean in the context of a match? What happens when they have to run right, when they have to run left, or they have to back up? Everything's different. So you can't really just have someone stand there and practice the technique.
Right.
You understand? It's all in the context of real-life tennis, and if you don't include decision-making into it, you're not really doing anything, in my opinion. Like, let's say I did a split screen with you, and you sent me a video, and I do video analysis, and I do what a lot of people do, and I just do a split screen next to you and Roger Federer, and we just talk about, this is what you're doing, Lisa, and this is what Roger Federer or Serena Williams is doing. What does that even mean to you? How does that help you?
It makes me feel very inept.
How does it help your game? It's like, why does John McEnroe still have a continental grip on his forehand? Why has he not evolved with the times and started just saying, oh, Roger Federer is doing this. He's the greatest player of all time. Why don't I try and do this kind of grip? You know, why don't I use a semi-weight? Because
sure.
The player understands what's good for him, and then you work with the player to be able to control the ball, to be able to... you know, the whole point of playing tennis is to make it difficult for your opponent to hit the ball. It's not the technique. It's to go on court and for you to make it as difficult for your opponent to hit it. You know, find ways to basically destroy your opponent's contact. The swing is just will help you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you have a pretty swing doesn't mean that you'll be able to do all those things that allow you to win points.
Sure. All right, we have a caller on the line. It makes total sense. We have a caller on the line, Tom. I'm going to bring him on. It's area code 570-793. Caller, are you there?
Hi, Lisa. My name is Rob. How are you?
Hey, Rob. Nice to talk to you. I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. Well, I understand that you've done some work with Tom, and I would love to hear what you have to say.
Yes, ma'am. You know, I think it's very interesting just kind of coming from a coaching perspective to give you a little bit of background from me. I've been a tennis coach for 6 years or so. I was a collegiate tennis player. You know, I've been playing tennis for probably my whole life. And recently, you know, I came into contact with Tom, and he kind of gave me some perspective on coaching as he's doing it right now. And it not only made a really big difference in how I coach a tennis lesson, but also in how I play for myself on an everyday level. And it's this whole idea of not coaching a stroke, but rather coaching, you know, within a context and with decisions built in, really is absolutely game-changing, I think, as far as, you know, how you can convey a message to a pupil on an everyday level. And I was trying to describe this to my spouse yesterday, and just kind of saying, look, you know, you have a little kid, you don't teach them how to walk. You know, you help them figure out how to walk. And I think they, you know, from that perspective, you know, everybody is going to swing a tennis racket a little bit differently, and you can help them and guide them to do it so they can hit it with a little bit more power, or so that they can play the ball a little bit shorter, or so they can hit it cross court a little bit better, so that they're accomplishing their goal. And I've just found that, you know, it's not only has it, like I said, changed my approach, but I find that the way that a pupil will pick up the techniques and be able to execute what they're trying to do just happens so much faster, and they have an ability to then make a decision on the tennis court about what they're doing rather than just trying to, for instance, have a power on their forehand, because that's what they see Roger Federer do.
Right. So how long have you been using Tom's methods with your students?
Just a couple of months now, Lisa, since February, early
okay.
April now. So just 2 months or so.
And do you coach mostly kids or adults, or I'm just curious?
Really, I coach the whole gamut from, you know, a 5- and 6-year-old little kids all the way up to some nationally ranked juniors in the 10 and 12 range to adults who play at the 3-5, 4-5 level, as well as, you know, geriatric tennis, if you will. So it really works no matter where you're implementing it. And all it requires is a little bit of context, I find. And allowing that player to kind of step out and find their stroke rather than me showing you what your stroke should be.
Yeah, how you doing, Rob? Can you hear
Great.
Me?
How are you, Tommy?
I'm good, man. I'm glad my methods are helping out. Yeah, I think that the one problem I run into is that people feel like this isn't, like you can't coach good technique. As I said earlier, I've coached players who have great technique. You just put it into context and you show, and you always have them making decisions at the same time. It doesn't mean that you can't coach great technique. It just means that the player's having to think, and you're giving someone a reason for doing the technique. You know, why might they want the arm straight on the forehand like Federer? Why are they using the wrist? Why should they do this? Why should they do that? And I actually get better results, and I think that the players that I coach have great technique because I sell it to them. You know, I get them wanting to do this technique because I give them real reasons for doing it, and they buy into it. So I think if you want to coach someone to have great technique, I think this method of contextual coaching is the way to go. It really helps them to do it. You know, coaching, making changes to your technique is really difficult. You know, it's not an easy thing. I was videoing myself last week. I wanted to change my serve. When I got onto court, I did 4 different service techniques. I thought, okay, this one I'm gonna be a little bit more relaxed. This one I'm gonna snap my wrist a little bit more. I did 4 different things to kind of see on video which one I liked the most. So I went inside, I plugged my video in. They all looked exactly the same. Like, exactly the same. I was like, well, I thought that I was doing some big stuff here. Like, it's not easy to go out there and make changes. So it's really important that you put it in context. So if you want someone to do topspin, you don't talk about it in a technical way. You create challenges to help them to to hit more topspin, reasons for them to hit more topspin. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this, because given the fact that my audience is mostly made up of tennis parents like myself, and I'm sure there are some of my listeners out there are coaching their children, but I'm guessing the majority of them have a non-parent coach. As a parent, what is there in your methodology, in your website, that can help me help my child and help the coach help my child? What's as a non-coach parent, what can I learn from you and from your website?
Well, I can, if you're saying that someone already has a coach, and
yes.
Okay. So then I would really talk about effective questioning. I think that's a huge key. And, you know, everything I've spoken to already, I hope that would help too, of just putting everything into context, not saying anything without explaining why. I think that's a huge part of it. But effective questioning, involves the player in their own development. It makes them excited because they feel like they're responsible for what they're doing. And it just helps everyone to work as a team rather than the, now, as I said earlier, the person who knows versus the person who doesn't. It's kind of tough with kids, you know. They kind of rebel a little bit. They don't really want to listen. So I think effective questioning is great. And that could be something like, you know, what do you feel like you want to work on today? What do you feel like you need to work on? It could also be, you know, what could you have done different on that shot? And you can just ask them. And then they're giving you the answers without you just telling them what to do. You become more of a team rather than, it's more of a cooperative style rather than a command style of coaching. But also, you know, if you're feeding them, you don't know anything about tennis. You could say, you want me to feed harder? Do you want me to feed softer, deeper, wider? Like, how would you like me to feed this next ball to really challenge you on this next shot? You understand? That would be a great question to ask the kid, and that puts them in control, and it'll actually help them to find the learning zone. They'll challenge themselves to ask you to feed them balls in a place that's not too easy and it's not too difficult, and that's where you want to be. So the player can help the parent just as much as the parent can help the player.
That makes sense. That really makes sense. And I, you know, I'm thinking from again my personal situation where my son does have a coach. Actually, you know, he works with an academy, so there are several coaches there, but one main coach that he works with. And you know, I try to kind of keep my role as the parent separate from any type of tennis involvement, other than I'm the chauffeur and the checkbook, basically. But because I did grow up playing tennis, and go ahead.
I'm sorry, Lisa. What I could also do, like with someone like you, is, you know, we could all talk, and I'm not trying to tell you my shares, right? I'm just saying we could create sort of a worksheet so where he could fill it in after the match of what he was doing out there, how well this worked, what he needs to work on, you know. Because it's tough when a parent is talking to the kid after they play a match and they've had a tough loss.
Yeah.
You know, how do you talk to them? It's a tough situation. So you can also, I can develop worksheets to kind of help that situation. So the player fills it out. It maybe helps you to know how they're thinking, and maybe I can include questions that the parent feels is appropriate for the player. Would be useful?
Yeah, I mean, one of my biggest challenges always is the space immediately following a match, and I've gotten a lot better over the years. I mean, we've been doing this a long time now, and I was always, you know, I'm very type A personality, so the second he would come off the court, I would say, okay, you know, why did you do this? And, you know, what, you know, why, when this situation came up, don't you think it would have been better to do that? And, you know, what were you thinking out there? And not in an attacking way, but just in, you know, more of, okay, I want to hear from you. I want to know exactly, you know, what you were thinking out there. And now I've learned immediately after the match is absolutely not the time to have any type of conversation having to do with his performance or anything having to do with his match. Immediately after the match, I need to just be quiet and give him space and wait until he's ready to have a conversation and let him initiate it. But it took me a long time to figure that out. And you know, I like to think I'm a relatively intelligent person, but sometimes emotions take over and you know, get the best of us, and our intentions are good, but our actions aren't. And that was where I found myself a lot. And so now, you know, I feel like once he is ready to have the conversation, and it may not necessarily be with me anymore, too. I mean, now the conversation typically happens more with his coach, and he doesn't want to discuss his match with me at all, even though I was the one there watching. I do think it would be helpful to have a go-to.
Do you think it would be more comfortable if he filled in, like, sort of a worksheet, sort of diary of how he felt? Maybe he can wait half an hour now until he calms down a little bit, but something where the questions... It's tough to ask effective questions in that situation, so if I feel like the worksheets, you know, can really help that situation and help you to understand how he's feeling out there, because it's tough, but... just switching subjects, I know, because I was listening to some of your radio shows, and I know you were talking about, you know, playing under pressure, how you can sort of perform the way that you should be performing, or you feel like you should be performing, you know, getting tight, all those kinds of things. Is that something that you feel is in, you know, it's key, isn't it? It's just everyone suffers from those kinds of things. And,
sure, and I think confidence issues come into play. You know, you have a few bad matches in a row or a few bad tournaments in a row, and all of a sudden you start questioning, you know, am I really good enough to be out there? And those are the kinds of things that, as a parent, it's very difficult to watch because, you know, from my perspective, of course my kid belongs out there. He works hard and, you know, His skill level is there. It's just helping him get over that mental hump. And I think his coach, you know, that's one of the things his coach is really, really good at is helping him on the mental side. But as the parent, it's very difficult to watch your child go through those, you know, quote unquote slumps and see their confidence wane.
Yeah, I am. You know, my website is, I feel like my number one customer is parents, our parents, but, you know, I work with a lot of players too. And, you know, this is something that, you know, playing under pressure and how to win matches is something that comes up all the time. And what I feel like I've got somewhat of a formula to help people, play effectively in matches. And one thing is, well, for a start, you can't protect a lead when you're playing tennis. That's why it's different than so many other sports, is you can't just play out the match until the whistle blows and, you know, protect the lead. You actually have to go out and win it. And I think a lot of times when people are on court, you're just kind of hoping that your opponent gives you it and you can just kind of crawl over the finish line. And the way I like to put it, I'm a very logical person, as you might have told this, you know, to tell this this radio show, but I like to think of things in a logical way, and there are basically three ways that you can win points. You can hit winners, you can force your opponent into making errors, or you can hope for unforced errors. They're the only three ways of winning a point in tennis. And quite often when a player gets into a tough situation, they get nervous, They just hope that their opponent makes unforced errors. And if that's all you're doing, you're basically just working with one category out of three. So just in a logical way, when I'm on court and I'm playing and I'm playing negative tennis, I can actually think logically, this isn't working. I've seen the formula. I'm only working with one out of three ways of winning this point, and my opponent's working with all three. So that sort of encourages me to, you know, be a little bit more aggressive and work with the forcing errors and winners. And, even if you play that way, inevitably your opponent's going to put a good shot on you. So just playing in that style of tennis doesn't really work. But what I like to do is show people how to focus on the forcing errors category. So how do you force your opponent into missing the shot? How do you find ways to destroy your opponent's contact? Because that's what tennis is all about. And I think if you go into a match and that's your focus, I'm not saying it'll cut out all nerves and you'll play awesome, but it is a good focus to have of saying, how can I force my opponent into hitting tough shots every time? Because then the winners will come. But if you're just focusing on hitting winners, that's tough. Like, that's when people miss as well. You know, it's hard to hit winners when you're nervous, it's a tight match. So, I like to tailor strategies to really suit a player's technique and their game, give them ways to make it difficult for their opponent.
I think that makes so much sense. So for somebody like me and my son, if we wanted to work with you, I mean, I'm guessing the first step is sending you video footage. But, you know, what is it that you're looking for when somebody submits video footage to you?
Well, this is sort of why I started this business, because I had, I would have people contacting me via YouTube and sending me, six shots of someone hitting a forehand where they've been hand fed a ball, and I'm just kind of
right.
Like, what do I do with that? Like, I don't know anything. I have no context. I don't know what that even means. So I would kind of end up talking to the person, either emailing them or just saying, hey, just give me a call. So it kind of turned into more of a consulting thing. Of getting to know the person, getting to know what their game is, what the real problem is, and then sort of giving them interventions and methods to help that. So, sending a video is good. I like people to just contact me through the website with their email, and then I'll send them back a lot of questions, asking them things, or I'll just arrange a time to talk to them over the phone. But it's not. It is video analysis sometimes, but it's also not. I talk with parents just over the phone, just give them advice without really making any videos. But I do a lot of video analysis.
Mhm.
It's a whole variety of different things.
And so, just getting down to brass tacks, how does your program work in terms of fees or do you have different packages that you offer? How does that work?
Well, I charge $100 per hour. And what I'll do is, once I find out what you want and sort of the, it's not always a problem, but the problem is how I can help you, I'll just send you an email with the estimated how long it's going to take and therefore the cost. And then you can decide whether you want to go on with the service or not. So I might say, for what you need, I'll make a video. It's going to cost $100. Or, we'll just talk for a little bit. Or I'll send you an email with some purposeful practice routines, and it might be $40. But I'll send you that, and I'll let you know how I can help you, and then you have a decision to whether you want to go on with, my services or not.
Right. So for someone who is not currently working with a coach and they're going to rely on you full on for coaching, from a practical standpoint, how does that work?
So when the, you said without, they don't have a coach?
Right. So let's say, you know, there's a...
I'm sorry, Lisa, go ahead.
I was going to say, so let's say, you know, I'm a parent with an 8-year-old that I'm trying to get into tennis, but I'm not going to coach them. I'm not capable of that. I don't have the time or the knowledge or whatever the reason is. And you're going to be their coach from a virtual standpoint. How would we work our relationship?
Well, I mean, you could just book in, just like I coach on court now, and I have a lesson every week with someone for 1 hour. You know, I could make you a video every week, or I could, you know, talk to the player over the phone. I work with a guy, a professional guy in Florida right now who, you know, I give him advice over the phone. But I can also just make videos and say, hey, this week, see if you can work on this, see if you can develop this forehand. This is the things I'd like you to focus on. Give me a call, let me know how it went this week. And, you know, we can go from there.
And
anything is possible with the sort of technology these days. We can really communicate very well.
That's true. That's very true. So, I mean, have you ever had situations where a parent has taken a laptop on the court and you've Skyped or FaceTimed while the child's on court?
Yeah, as I said earlier, when a parent sends me a couple of shots with a hand feed, I just sent it back saying, you know, I can help you with this, but it would be great if you could video your kid playing some points. And then once I see that, that really helps me to tailor methods to really help you.
Sure.
So yeah, video in matches is great, and it's not always technique. It's a lot of tactical stuff which can help a player, and it can even help a player's technique. I was just talking to someone the other day, and this is kind of going off subject a little bit, but it just popped into my head that when I don't know if you remember a guy called Greg Rozetsky.
Yeah.
So he pretended he was English for a minute, with a thick Canadian accent, and he got to the final of the U.S. Open, and in 15 sets of tennis, he hit 4 backhand winners. That's it. Now, Lisa,
yeah,
you would be upset if you played 15 sets and only hit 4 backhand winners, right?
Yes.
You would wonder what's going on. But, you know, it's just figuring out how to play, like what's best for you to play and be successful and win matches. And I feel like that's what I enjoy doing, and that's what I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of different ways to improve someone's game, and I try to find the methods to do that.
Well, that's fantastic. I just, Rob, before we go off air, because we're down to our last minute or so, I wanted to ask you, what do you feel like is the biggest benefit you've gotten from working with Tom?
It's just been a totally different perspective on how I'm looking at tennis. It's allowed me to approach it from an angle that I'd never considered before, and just by that fact opens up a whole myriad of other possibilities that I just didn't have available to me before. You know, when you're just thinking about stroke production, it's very difficult to kind of even assess, you know, what you're actually trying to do here rather than just hit a forehand or a backhand. It's been great working with them.
That's awesome. And are you noticing that the kids that you coach are kind of shifting their own mindsets as well? Are you seeing a different attitude on the court from your players?
Absolutely. What's kind of funny, Lisa, is that most of the kids that I coach, they don't even know that something has changed. I really believe that if you're doing it right, you're not walking on court one day and saying, hey, we're going to do this all differently. You're just kind of approaching it with a purpose and with a lot more context and with a lot more decision-making involved. And I find that involves the student a lot more It gets them on board with what you're doing, and you can be a guide and a conduit, you know, to push them in the right direction, and you can work towards doing that together rather than just being, I'm the instructor and you're the pupil, you do what I tell you, and, you know, at the end of the hour you go home. It really
right.
gets them thinking about it and working with it, and everybody's on the same page.
I love that. And one of the things I preach constantly on my blog and on my radio shows is that tennis is, you know, it's basically a way to learn some phenomenal life lessons. And it seems to me that, Tom, your approach and really being mindful and purposeful when you're on the court is a skill that these players can take into their academic life, into their professional life, whether that's tennis-related or not, and into their personal relationships as well. So having that ability to focus, to think about the why behind things is a phenomenal life skill that they're gaining, again, on the tennis court. So thank you for sharing your philosophy with us today, and for Rob, thank you for taking time to call in and share your experiences with Tom's methods. I hope that my listeners will take some time and check out the website. It will be linked on our links page this afternoon, but it's tpatennis.com. And Tom, you also have a kind of a secondary website. I'm going to let you give a brief description of that. We're just about out of time, but I want to make sure that we get that information out as well. Your other site
It's tpatennis.net, and it's just when I was searching the website, searching YouTube, anything that I found that was interesting, I just figured I'd just make a website and just put everything on there so, you know, people can go there and know that there's going to be something interesting. The most current article I just put on is titled, Are Skate Parks Popular Because of No Parents and Coaches? So that's a pretty interesting theory, and that was from a USTA publication on quick start tennis. And I write my little, I give my verdict on that. That's, you know, it's pretty interesting. So yeah, that's, I got two websites and just out there to help people, really.
Well, we so appreciate it. And again, both links will be up on parentingaces.com later today on our links page, so take a peek. And I want to thank both of you guys for taking time out. I know you are both so busy, and I so appreciate what you have to offer. And thank you for being here. To my listeners, thanks for tuning in. The link to the podcast for today's show will be online later today as well under our radio show page. And I look forward to speaking with everybody again next week. Have a fantastic week. Happy Earth Day. Do something great for the planet today. And I'll see y'all next week at Parenting Aces.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Yes, mate.